Our story this morning takes there's two stories. It takes place at the end of chapter 4 in John and the beginning of chapter 5. I'm not going to read those passages to you, but simply share them, the story with you. Leaving Samaria, Jesus proceeds to Galilee in the northern part of Israel, where he grew up. He comes to Cana, and while there a Gentile man and a royal official from Capernaum has a son that's very sick. And he hears that Jesus is in the area, and he goes to see him, begging him that he will come from Cana to Capernaum and heal his son. Jesus said, "Well, unless you see signs and wonders, you will not believe." Because already Jesus is aware that people are more interested in his miracles than in him. They're attracted to what they see that is miraculous, the water turning to wine, the healings, the ability for Jesus to do things that break the norm. But this man is desperate and he persists, asking Jesus to come before his son dies. "Please come and heal my son." Jesus says, "Go, your son will live." And so the man took Jesus at his word and went on his way home. Before he gets clear home, he runs into people that are coming to find him, his servants. And they say, "Your son is alive." So he asks what time that his son began to get better. And they said it was the same time that Jesus said he would live. This man, a Gentile, took Jesus at his word and went home to find his son alive. The next story takes place in Jerusalem at a pool. The pool was famous for its healing properties. The sick, blind, and lame came for its healing. Both the Jews and the Gentiles considered it a sacred site with healing properties. The water would bubble up on occasion from a stream underneath, and it would cause a stirring of the water. The story was told that if you were the first one into the water in the pool after the water stirred, you would be healed. Some thought it was an angel. Others thought it was just the magic of the pool. There's a man that's lying beside the pool. He's been there for the past 38 years, patiently waiting. He didn't ask for anything, and he doesn't even appear to know who Jesus is when he walks through the area. Nor does he seem to know that Jesus does miracles. But Jesus noticed him and said to him, "Do you want to be made well?" The man doesn't seem to even hear the question, but he simply responds with his usual answer. "I have no one to put me into the pool when the water is stirred, and others always get there first." Jesus doesn't criticize his answer or chide him for making excuses. He simply says, "Stand up, take your mat, and walk." The man was made well. He took up his mat and began to walk. At first glance, these stories couldn't be more different. One has a father taking all the initiative, coming all the way to Jesus. The other man does nothing. One has a father insisting that when Jesus doesn't immediately respond, insisting that he please come and heal his son before he dies. The other man does nothing. One has Jesus expressing his frustration about their need for signs. The other one doesn't even seem to know that Jesus does signs, or that there are signs, or that there are miracles. One has a man leaving Jesus wondering when it will happen. What will happen? The other man walks immediately. One does nothing other than go home. The other is an invalid and he's told to stand up. But in both cases, a healing takes place. I think again we see that there is no pattern to what Jesus does or how Jesus heals a person. And too often in the church we've made patterns out of some portion of what Jesus does. When we talked about Jesus and Nicodemus and their conversation together and how Jesus said to Nicodemus, you must be born again. We talked about the fact that Jesus only ever told one man in all of Scripture, you must be born again. And yet, so much of the church has made that our mantra, you must be born again. It was a conversation between Jesus and Nicodemus. And it spoke to Nicodemus and his needs. From the healing stories, we often talk about praying with faith, believing in the healing, and that you, it matters what it say, what you say, and it matters whether or not you express doubt. And if you express doubt, then you don't have enough faith and you won't be healed. And so we sometimes put all these kind of ways that you have to say it on these requests for healing, and if you don't say it right, well, then that's why you weren't healed. Yet we see that Jesus didn't follow any patterns. The man by the pool for 38 years didn't ask and didn't even say he wanted to be healed, and yet he was healed. I think it has really nothing to do with following a formula. That has everything to do with trust. I wonder which takes more trust. To go home without proof. Nothing more than Jesus' words that said, go, your son will live. It was between 16 and 20 miles to walk home. Or does it take more trust for an invalid who can't get to the pool to be told, stand up, take up your mat, and walk? It isn't about doing things a certain way. It's about following the leadings as they come and trusting God. The truth is, we want signs and wonders so that we can believe. And I don't think we're really any different than the people that came to see Jesus asking for signs and wonders. It's so easy to doubt that God really cares about me and about my situation, whatever it is. Whether it be health, whether it be a place to live, a job, whether it be just wondering about life. We think that if something irrefutably amazing happens, then we would know for sure. We would know for sure that God exists and that God cares about me. Yet we have to try. We have to believe in something. We have to hope. And so we ask. And like the father that went to see Jesus, desperation drives us to ask for a miracle. We hope that along the way we will find some glimmer of evidence that God does care about me and about my situation. That God is aware, that God knows, that I am important, that I matter. Sometimes we even bargain with God and making a contract with God. If you do this, then I will do that. Even in that, we're asking for signs so that we can trust, so that we know it will be okay. But I think ultimately we have to seek God unconditionally, because until then we limit God because of our expectations, so God isn't free to be God. We create God in our own image rather than allowing God to be God, with all of the freedom and independence and godness that God is. But But then we find ourselves in moments of deep despair. And the truth is that God comes all the way to us. Like the man at the pool, God asks nothing of us. God understands our excuses, and He really pays them no attention. God knows our inner being and meets us there without judgment, without criticism. God simply comes all the way to us. I'm often amazed at what God does ask of us. To go home without proof, nothing more than Jesus' words, go and your son will live. Just a minute, before you leave, I've got to make a cell phone call home to see if it's really true that my son is going to be okay. We want instant answers. And yet, this man didn't get them other than a promise from Jesus. Would it be true? There was no such option for a cell phone, just a 20-mile walk home, wondering what was happening. I can imagine him both running and walking slowly, wondering what happened and can't wait to get home, and yet afraid that his son would have died. But then partway home, he meets his servants and finds out that his son is well. Learning that he began to get well at the same time that Jesus said he would live, he knew. He knew that Jesus had healed him and that he could trust Jesus with his life. Scripture tells us, so he himself believed, along with his whole household. Again, I am convinced that this word believed would be better translated as trusted. And when you look up the Greek word to trust in or entrust yourself to, along with having faith as well as believe, is they are all appropriate translations. But for us, we've turned belief into this doctrine that we have to believe in, this external thing that we have to believe in. It's a set of beliefs when Jesus wants it to be about a relationship, about simply trusting Jesus. We don't have to figure it all out. We don't have to understand it all. We don't have to know all of the whys. We simply trust that Jesus is with us. That Jesus knows. When I pray for healing, I can often sense that my prayer has been heard. But I don't always know the outcome right away. I must trust, waiting until it was revealed. And ultimately, I recognize that the miracle may not be the one that I expected. Yet I see God at work and my trust is strengthened. And I see God redirecting me and moving me here so that I can get there. In the other story, Jesus asked an invalid who can't get to the pool to stand up, take up your bed and walk. If I were Jesus, I would have told him, now wiggle your toes, move your feet, bend your legs. Do some stretches. See if you can lift your foot off the ground just a little bit. A little more. Bend your knee. Move your arms. And maybe sit up. And then I'll help you stand. But I'll hold you so you won't fall over. Because you haven't walked on these legs for a very, very long time. So I'll help you. I would expect a very slow process. But if we take Scripture at face value, it sounds like Jesus just says, stand up, take up your mat and walk to a man who cannot walk and hasn't walked for at least 38 years. But how often does God ask us to do something that we haven't done before? What I've learned is that the ability and the confidence come in the doing. I want often to know ahead of time that I have what I need to do what it is that I feel nudged toward. I want experience. I want education. I want a sense of having been able to try it out in little steps. And often God is gracious. But other times I find that God is saying, just step out and do. And I simply step out trusting that God will give me what I need in the moment. I may not do it perfectly, and I probably won't meet some external expectations about how to do that well or how to be proficient at that. But I find out that I'm enough. And sometimes I even learn that my lack of expertise is more readily accepted by another person than if I was experienced and polished and well-trained in that. When I just am me and step out and do what I feel God nudging me to do, that others can open themselves in ways that I don't expect. So like an invalid being able to stand and walk, I can do what is asked of me because God is faithful. But all of this is so dependent upon trusting God, that God is present and walks with me, and that I'm enough. That I can trust. That God will show me the next steps. That God will meet my deepest need. And that God will be faithful to walk with me. It's the invitation to let go and just trust God. To hold on to God. And let God figure out what God's going to do about it. Let's wait as we enter into open worship and invite God to speak directly to us. As we reach out and simply trust.